Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, good evening. How are you?
Real good, Mr. Allen. Real good. Beautiful day here in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis,
yes,
and St. Paul. Looks like spring may be here.
Yes, we're going to have a power-packed show tonight for the next hour, and I'd like to probably start off right away. We have a guest on hold. We got people texting already. The phone lines will be open at 374-426-3904 for those of you that like to text and not call in. We're just taking phone calls. But anyway, Mr. Edwards, let's get started. On the line live, we have Mr. Tom Wolfgram. He's a local businessman concerned about public education. Mr. Wolfgram, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, tell us a little bit about your concept to have children to read by kindergarten, and you've basically, as far as I can see, solved the that issue, but you don't have too many ears or actions these days. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, the concept is pretty straightforward, and it basically duplicates what already exists in the Montessori method for the language domain and the math domain. There's just a set of activities, probably 20 or 30 activities for each of the domains, that once the child, and these activities are designed for children that are 5 years and younger, obviously rolling into the sixth year, but once these activities are achieved by the children, they're ready to read and count and basically understand positive expectations going into kindergarten.
Okay,
and
it's a
concept that's been demonstrated for 100 years.
So is this the same concept that the Northside Achievement Zone is using?
I don't believe so. No.
Okay.
Let me
ask this question, sir. R. Edwards here. Why not? Because the Achievement Zone that Mr. Allen just mentioned has been touted as the paramount example of dealing with the so-called education or achievement gap. What is your take on the failure for them to utilize this 100-year-old concept?
I really don't have an answer to that. You know, I haven't necessarily talked to the Achievement Zone, but this is a private industry type of concept. The Montessori method of education has been on the side of the development and the reform process forever. I mean, it's just not mainstream. And when you don't have something mainstream, there's a lot of change. I mean, there's a lot of resistance to change everywhere.
Okay. With that said, so the Montessori model is something that would work in the classroom, and I don't really know. I couldn't tell you what.
Wait. The Montessori method is a preschool method.
It's a preschool method. Yeah, exactly.
The whole concept of doing first things first, right the first time, is to actually get those children starting kindergarten ready to read, count, and understand positive expectations.
Okay,
with that as a foundation, everything else will flow a lot easier.
Okay. Have you presented this to anyone in educate, like the commissioner or those board of teaching, Minnesota Board of Teaching, or any of the St. Paul Minneapolis public schools?
No. What I've done is I've sent them a barrage of emails now, probably over the last 3 years, and I'm basically waiting. I'm basically waiting for them to wake up. Because when you basically there's a couple of things here that when you start analyzing what exactly is first things first, one thing is obviously to get the child ready, but the other piece of it is that it's actually the parent or the mom that has to be primed to basically help their child get ready at that age. So it's not just the child, it's mom and child, and it's so you flow into expectations, positive expectations, negative expectations, attitude. I mean it takes a major change to pull something like this off, and there's a lot of resistance.
Okay, you said now you're familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs. The self-esteem, the belongingness, the safety needs, the psychological needs. Now,
right.
A question that I have, along those lines is that, is there an economic component? You said that this was like kind of private company kind of thing. Is there an economic component for the parent, that mother who has that child a couple years out of before kindergarten?
Well, first off, you mentioned those needs, and I'd like to talk about influence a little bit, but I do want to deal directly with the economics. As a mother with a child that is either going to be ready for kindergarten or not be ready for kindergarten, you just need to take the expected cash flow of a graduate or a non-graduate over the future and discount it back, and you'll find that the present value of being ready is over $500,000. Hmm. It's actually $1 million. The present value is actually $1 million, but the question is how much of this actually applies to the child at age 5 or 6. Because there's some other things that happen, there's other risks that are introduced to the child's life, after age 5 before they graduate. So, but the present value of that positive expectation positive expectation of cash flow from graduation, whether it be high school, secondary, or 4 year, it's way over the cash flow that would happen if you would drop out. That's a big number. Now, how does that, and here's where I want to get to the word, the Maslow, and I want to get to the word influence, because how does that expectation of cash flow actually influence mom to want to have her child ready?
Yeah.
There. That's it. Because once that influence happens, then everything else is flowing.
Okay, I guess okay.
Everything else is positive.
What would that influence be? No, other than okay, let me give you a scenario real quick. You have children and families in North Minneapolis that are some of them that use the health clinic there. Actually, 91% of the people that use North Point Health and Wellness are 275%. I said that correctly. 91% of the people that use North Point Health Clinic are 275% below the poverty line, the federal poverty line. So if you have a mother, single mother with two or three kids, children that are preschool age, how do you get that influence or how do you connect? Our public schools and preschools are doing a bad job of connecting anyway, but how do you connect the urgency or the need or the influence so that they're very clear on what your model is speaking to?
Well, how do you convince mom that her child and her by association have a much better future with a complete and total start into the education system. You know, you're talking, in a lot of respects, Don, you're talking about the whole concept of who wants to be in the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
And how much energy are you going to put forth to climb into the middle class?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's
I'm not trying to...
No, I understand. But I guess my last question is...
But it is basic economics.
Yes, I agree 100%.
It is exactly what a family does in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How can people find out more information regarding your models and your thinking on this? Is there a website? Is there an email address?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. It would be www.usavalues-character.com.
Okay, and I will put that up on the chat room board in about less than 30 seconds. And,
before you let the gentleman go, I have a couple questions.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Earl.
Thank you. I mean, wow, you just said something just a couple seconds ago that was rather interesting, so that has generated the following question from me, because I, in many respects, am a black nationalist, okay, so, and don't apologize for it. So, number one, how much does the issue of race play in either the success, the failure, or the recognition of some of the aspects of what you've been talking to us about for the last 13 minutes? Talk to us a little bit about race. What does race play here?
Well, race disparities, white privilege, the whole concept of setting low standards, being and setting standards at lower than they can be achieved. All of that plays into the present discussions of race. The way out of this is not for a white guy to try to convince a black mother that she needs to have a positive expectation. The way out of this
what prima facie evidence do we have that a black mother, and by the way, there are many households in which there is, you know, a dual presence, a mother and a father.
Correct.
But what is it that would negate a black mother from not having an appreciation and understanding of achieving, you know, the maximum success or attainment based on what her circumstances are? I mean, is there any data that would indicate that there would be a difference between a black mother and a white mother?
I would. I really can't answer that. I mean, I don't know the empirical data. What I do understand is the social data, and that is what. Well, the social data is that I don't understand the black culture.
Mm-hmm.
I don't live the black culture,
mm-hmm.
and for me to be able to influence somebody in that black culture is a stretch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, the point is that there are people far smarter and better positioned than what I'm going to call the white privilege, the white privilege to help. But they have to do things first things first.
And
in order, ready to read, count, and understand positive expectations, going into kindergarten, first things first.
Going into kindergarten. Now, let me ask you this question, sir. What kind of examination of empirical data and material have you done with regards to what should also then be the attainment level educationally and intellectually of the parents? See, I have this problem with the continued deterioration of the African-American educational attainment has been so acute over the last couple of decades that does the mother that we're talking about and the father who we're talking about in the African-American household, do they have really the intellectual and educational attainment and training and conditioning to help their child? And in what situations are we sometimes faced with circumstances in which the child reads better, more knowledgeable, and can count better than the parent?
Well, you've got a point. I mean, if mom looks at her situation and her child, and she says, "Here's where I need to be going into kindergarten," and she doesn't feel like she can.
Where the child needs to be going into kindergarten. Yeah. Okay.
Here's where the child needs to be, and myself, in terms of being able to help the child, needs to be going into kindergarten. Then basically she has to be able to call for a mentor, and that mentor should be on her doorstep tomorrow. It's not a classroom, it's a mentor. It's somebody who will help her get her child ready for kindergarten.
I see. Okay. All right.
The point I got to get to here is that we've got to cut the classroom out of it. We've got to make this one-on-one to be accountable and to feel the benefits of the achievement.
And are we then saying to each other here in this conversation, in which, you know, we have both a local and international audience, that some way or another institutions have failed us to the extent that that type of foundation platform is not there? And what does that say for public education in America?
Well, you know, let me go to the experts on this one. There's a publishing by Maria Montessori called The Absorbent Mind, and on page 14 of The Absorbent Mind, you will find Maria Montessori saying that if the parents within the society can't deliver the children ready, basically society needs to step in. That's simple. Okay.
Whether you step in
with your education system or you step in with other structures is
well, let me just cut in, sir, and ask you: does that mean we institutionalize the colored families, the colored children, the colored parents? I mean,
I don't think so.
In terms of the state taking away their parental rights.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's a solution. I mean, how would that be a solution?
We're not going to be able to overtalk each other. You said something earlier which was rather interesting. Well, you said a couple of things, but you indicated that it's a part of understanding what white privilege is all about, that you have not enjoyed or suffered through the experience of the black culture. So that kind of works both ways. So how do you reach the observation and the assertion that you just kind of made? I mean, how does that happen?
Repeat your last sentence again. I'm sorry.
How do you reach the assertion that you've just kind of made about what the black experience, well, absent the black experience in the case of you, How is it that you understand what it is that we as black people are thinking as it pertains to, and we now go back to the question of institutionalizing, because in this country, in fact, we see it every day right now with adoptions and foster care and et cetera, you know, we're having, as African Americans, a hard time maintaining possession of our children once the system steps in and says that, quote unquote, a parent, an African American parent, has failed whatever it is that's been set out as societally acceptable. And so the child has to be removed from the home. I mean, in some regards, this almost sounds like, you know, nationalization. Kind of reminds me of some of the European countries at different points in time in their history. So based on that,
I wasn't trying to go there.
Institutionalize? I mean, once the society decides that the African American is not capable of doing what has to be done, doesn't even understand the one-on-one, that the system, the institution, step in, take control, the child is moved into a more controlled environment. Are we talking about that?
No. We're talking about a school district that has a bank of mentors that help mothers get their children ready for kindergarten. That's what we're talking about. I mean, I'm not into this institutional thing. In fact, that you kind of surprised me with that. So I did want to answer.
Would think that an African American wouldn't recognize that doctrine in theory?
Possibly.
Given what we have experienced in our relationship with this society and its racism?
I really haven't gone into that. That deep thought. I mean, I'm sorry, I haven't. But the truth is, I haven't. I mean, I do believe that there's nothing. When a child is born, they're the same. At 1 year, they're about the same. At 2 years, they're about the same. Somehow we're introducing a great big gap between age two. And when the child starts kindergarten and is either ready to read or not.
Okay.
Now that needs some work. But I'm certainly not believing that institutions are better than families.
But at the same time, you are proposing that there needs to be an institution called mentors within the institution called public education.
I would think that would be helpful, yes.
Yes, okay. All right, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Mr. Allen, go ahead.
One other thing, can I finish up that one question you also asked? I mean, because there is a more modern set of materials on this, and it basically was published by a guy by the name of Chester Finn, and he's an education expert, was the president of the Fordham Education Institution, Excellence in Education, Institute, and on page 98 of his Reroute the Preschool Juggernaut, he explains also that basically there are at-risk families. All cultures have at-risk families, and they need extra effort before kindergarten just to stay.
Hello.
I think we've lost our guest, Mr. Allen. We don't want to lose his reflections and insight. Let's see if we can get him back. Hopefully, the connection was broke. Maybe the NSA decided it was time for this discussion to end. But can you get him back, Mr. Allen?
Yeah. I just texted him and asked him to call back because that did happen when he called into the studio right before the show. His cell phone dropped the call. So
let's give him the opportunity and accord him the respect of allowing him to complete his reflection and dissertation, if you will. So let's just kind of bounce along here and hope that he gets back to us and he doesn't have any any kind of communication trouble, because obviously, I mean, you and he have been talking and recognize each other's understanding and depth of the issues and the problems. I really don't want to lose his reflections, because once again, he has cited a significant authority, as we like to say, in this case, identifying Mr. Finn, who apparently was a professor at Fordham University. Well, he said the Fordham Foundation, but obviously connected with Fordham University in New York City. So, well, you know, we certainly want to recognize and reflect upon that.
Yes, yes, yes.
Is he back with us yet?
No, he is not. He is not. Just send him another message, and he would have to call in because our chat room is full.
All right. Well, then we have to. Oh, we're coming up on the hour 9, about 45 minutes. Let's touch on a couple other subject matters that we may have, Mr. Allen, and we'll wait for him to get back to us. What else do we have today? A lot of well, of course we have the Urban League. I mean, what's the latest on that?
Well, you know, the Urban League, I read in the newspaper this morning's issue of the Star Tribune that the Minneapolis Public School Board of Directors could put their money on hold. And I've been seeing a lot of chatter, Mr. Edwards, on Facebook, because it looks like a couple Sundays ago on a public radio station, they were one of the school directors, Director Gagnon, and a couple other people were on there kind of flossing and chumming it up about this Sumatech program. And how great it was going to be in North High, and now it looks like the school district backed out on that,
I know you would not, you know, certainly we would not manufacture anything on this program. I just can't believe that, because I too heard the program, and Director Gagnon was absolutely positive and affirmative that the Sumatech program was go and et cetera. You're saying. I mean, what happened? I know that some folks, such as Ms. Delgado and others, have raised the question about a betrayal. What happened?
Well, you know, I sent a message to Ms. Carrie Jo Fedler, who was on that radio station, and she says, the district didn't do the work to make it happen, and they lagged in everything, was her quote, or was her message back to me on social media. And I asked her to call into the show tonight to tell us exactly what happened so that, you know, we'd have an accurate representation out there in the public sphere of what the Minneapolis Public School Board did after that great radio show where, you know, they said that everything's going smooth. And they had a board of director from the Minneapolis Public Schools on the air saying the same thing. Which leads me to believe
she
that
she never did. You're right, Mr. Allen. At no point in time during that reflection did she indicate that. Well, there could be some difficulty and some trouble. Wow, that's shocking. Well, of course, the phone lines are open for those that are familiar with this situation. Our phone lines are open, and why don't we just throw the number out there, Mr. Allen? Maybe we'll hear from some of the folks.
That number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Give us a call. The phone lines, again, are wide open. You know, I'm a little
See anything in the paper about Sumatech, but my reflection just a couple minutes ago was the stories with regards to the Urban League allegations, and now they're money's being put on hold, and I wonder what the status of their $1.8 million legislative proposal is at this hour as the Minnesota legislature begins to kind of wind down, get those bills out. We've got a lot of bills coming out, $3 million for our good friend Louis King for his employment development, protocol and program and et cetera. He's already received $1 million from the county and for the development of medical technical training and et cetera. So clearly OIC is doing extremely well at the legislature. They're batting a thousand almost, if you will. And everyone thought that the Urban League was going to come through for about $800,000 or thereabouts from the school district and another $300,000 or thereabouts from the legislature for about $1.1 million. And do we have any idea on what the decision by the board last night to lay this matter over? Did they lay it over, Mr. Alvin, or did they table it?
I'm not sure. I'm not seeing any updates. I'm looking on the different websites here, but I know that it was put on hold, so it obviously had to be tabled. So from
under Robert's rules, though, you could
yes.
you could lay a matter over until a future meeting. If you table it, it really becomes difficult under Robert's rules to get it back on the table for quote unquote discussion and action. I think that what the Star Tribune said is that the decision had been delayed, but the reporter did not indicate what the method, procedural method of delay was, and that is, was it laid over or was it tabled? And that becomes very crucial. But the Urban League does not have physical space now to accommodate the 90 students that they were looking to be compensated for. And the article went on. Again, this is not, Don and Ron making this up. This was in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the largest and most powerful newspaper here in the state of Minnesota, indicated that the Urban League, apparently without formal notification to the district until a couple of days ago, had rented that space to a charter school, and so consequently there was no space for the 90 students that they were Well, they'd already been funded for it. You know, by gosh, they'd already been funded for those 90 students. And so they, according to the Star Tribune, now, you know, maybe the Star Tribune misrepresented the facts of the information. I'm quite sure if they did, we will be hearing from the leadership of the Urban League, Dr. Collins and the new executive director / president, Steve Belton. I know they will correct that, but the Urban League asked the district to provide the space, and last night also the district turned them down. I mean, what was that all about, Don? Do we have any idea?
It says that Scott Gray asked for permission to use an unused space in the school district, but the district maintains it does not have any space to lease to the Urban League. And Steve Belton,
about all that space on the west wing, the east wing, I'm sorry, the east wing of the Urban League's facility there on Plymouth Avenue?
Yeah.
Don't they have sufficient enough space to accommodate 90 students?
Yeah, they should, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm just wondering. But how this happened, and politically I'm not quite understanding the thinking of the Urban League leadership do that, and at the same time have their hand out for upwards of $800,000 or more, and expect the district to politically accommodate them. I just don't quite understand that.
Yeah, and then let me see here. Today is the 15th, and I am looking at something here, Mr. Edwards, that might have just got posted. Let me get back there because it just shocked the hello dolly out of me. State auditor, legislative auditor Jim Noble to investigate the Minneapolis Urban League. Posted by
come on, Don. We must be just making that up here on Don and Ron.
I'm looking at it right now.
Legislative auditor?
The legislative auditor to investigate the Minneapolis Urban League. It is posted at 8:58 p.m. tonight. Just got up.
Well, that was just minutes ago. Now, was that a post or did someone text us to give us a heads up? I see some texting information coming across on my instruments. Well, wait a minute. And we're only going an hour tonight. This almost warrants an additional time. You're saying that James Noble, the legislative auditor, is investigating the Urban League of Minneapolis? Well, there is none in St. Paul.
Yes.
For what purposes, sir?
I'm trying to get in there right now, and it's let me get in there and figure this out. I'm trying to get into the dang blasted. I need another server. They
you
think
said this was posted at exactly
8:58
Central Standard Time.
Yeah, let me get in there because
wow.
I have to use another browser because Star Tribune puts a limit on how many free stories.
Yes,
you can.
I know there.
And I'm not really happy about that. Let me go here, local Minneapolis, and we'll look for the Urban League story because it was posted next to the Urban League story. I'm there. I'm going down the side, and legislative auditor, let me pull it up, and maybe it won't blank out this time. Here we go. Minneapolis legislative auditor is launching an investigation to whether the Minneapolis Urban League double billed the state and the Minneapolis school district for education programs that it received more than $1 million in taxpayer money since 2013. Legislative auditor James Noble, oh, come on, stop it. I want to keep reading. Legislative auditor James Noble said Wednesday allegations against the Urban League were serious enough to warrant an inquiry into the organization's finance and those responsible for the oversight. Whoa. School district awarded $800,000 to the organization to help students, struggling students get diploma from high schools. State records show the Urban League placed many of the same students in both programs and only had a small fraction graduate. The state education committee has said her office has no other details about the program known as the 13th grade because legislators stripped all accountability provisions from the grant measure 2 years ago.
Yeah, that was in the Star Tribune. Now, under the protocol of the Office of the Legislative Auditor, which is different from the state auditor, if you will, which is an elected office, Mr. Noble is not an elected public official. He is appointed. But the only way normally that he is brought in, if you will, or activated into a situation like that, is there has to be a inquiry and then a request by members of the legislature. Does the article indicate that the Republicans asked for this examination?
I am looking here. Education Commissioner Brenda Cassell said in an interview last week that the way the legislation was written, okay, well, I read that. There's two DFL state senators, Bobby Joe Champion and Jeff Hayden, were the main backers of the 13th grade legislation and now seeking to raise the program to $1.8 million over the next 2 years. Both are at the center of an ethics investigation for their involvement with the Minneapolis education called Community Standards Initiative, which had ties to Hayden's father.
So what organization?
Community Standards Initiative, CSI in the hood, yes. And Hayden's father, Peter Hayden, also served on the board of the Urban League at the time the organization received the state money in question.
Well, let me ask this question. Can we now begin to assume with a certain degree of concern that the school district, which are elected officials, if you will, that they knew about this impending request to the state auditor to begin a legal investigation, an audit, and an investigation of the Urban League of Minneapolis, and they felt very comfortable in delaying any future payment to the Urban League for the 13th grade? And also the jobs and employment that they indicated that they found for the students. Do you think that the school district, that the board of directors knew this last night?
I think they knew what was going on because I think someone dropped a dime. And, Mr. Edwards, you know they have to know what's going on because this is serious because it could implicate them, some of them, if they don't, you know, come clean. And I think this is one reason, too, why they're backing off this Sumatech stuff and a lot of other stuff. Noble is currently investigating another organization that has ties to Hayden. Hayden serves as a board member of Community Action Minneapolis, a taxpayer-funded nonprofit that's also at the center of an FBI and IRS program.
Now, this is coming in tonight because that was not in the Star Tribune story of yesterday and the day before. And where does this statement, is this in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, or where is this being posted?
Minneapolis Star Tribune, April 15, 2015, 9:03 a.m., p.m., excuse me, p.m., updated. Page, this is the same headline, Jim Noble to investigate the Urban League.
My God, they're updating as we are on the air.
Yes, it says Hayden and his wife, Terry, traveled to New York City at the organization's expense. They also attended a retreat at a luxury resort in Alexandria, Minnesota.
Oh,
Hayden
God.
Contends he did nothing wrong to benefit from CAM.
Okay.
Founded in the 1920s, the Urban League is currently in a financial crisis. In 2000, it listed more than $12 million in revenue from grants, gifts, and membership fees. But today, its revenues have declined to $3.5 million a year, according to its latest tax
plan. Oh, that's so sad. An organization that was at the pinnacle of its strength in 1989. Let me do this. I'm receiving text messages because I had been asked to announce two other specific situations which have to be of interest, number one, and consistent with what Mr. Allen, my associate, is reporting that is now being posted as we speak, that I have been informed that the federal government has issued subpoenas in the matter of the Community Action Agency. Subpoenas, federal subpoenas, have been issued for appearances before a federal grand jury.
Mm.
So that may be something they want to look at. Also, I have a request from individuals in the Liberian community who have asked that I report on this program the meeting. Don, there was a commission of inquiry as it pertains to the matter of Barwe Collins, the child, because we've not talked about it on this program tonight, whose body was found in the Mississippi River and whose father has been charged with murder in the second degree. And Mike Freeman has indicated he intends to take this matter to a grand jury and under Minnesota law in order to obtain the charge of murder in the first degree with malice, forethought, and intent. He says that he intends to do that. But on April 6, 2015, at approximately 6 o'clock at the OLM Center in Brooklyn Park, I do believe it is, a commission of inquiry was convened by the Liberian community. And what has happened is that a specific document has been circulated in which specific inquiries and questions were raised to the father, Mr. Pierre Collins, if you will. It is a document that is interesting. It is a Q&A, really. Questions were asked of Mr. Collins.
Mm-hmm.
He responded, if you will. Questions were asked relevant to the issue of the insurance, relevant to the issue of his presence in the vicinity of the Mississippi River on the 18th day of March, if you will. Questions relevant to if he, in fact, was a pedophile and had been involved in the sexual molestation of two children by another woman a couple of years ago. Before his relationship with his current wife, if you will. His responses are interesting, if you will. I've indicated that I'd be more comfortable if the Liberian community would publish this Q&A that took place, again, on April 6, 2015, at the OIM Center, if you will, under the auspices of the Liberian organization in Minnesota. So we have done our due diligence, if you will. The document that was provided to my office indicates that that there is a more complete report, if you will, of the Q&A, and that it is available through the Liberian Organization of Minnesota. And in light of what has happened, I'm afraid that absent an attorney, and I'm really disappointed, Don, that 20-some days ago I talked with Reverend Smith and other leaders of the Liberian community. You know, we have been speaking of this situation on our program over the last 3 weeks, almost a month. And in some conversations, they indicated they had obtained legal counsel. In other conversations, they indicated that they were on the verge of doing that, et cetera. And today, as Mr. Collins made his first appearance, which was lasted about 2 minutes, before a district court judge, a public defender was appointed because Mr. Collins does not have an attorney. And I'm now hearing that there is such a division that has been created within the West African community and the Liberian community, that really there will be no monies raised for an attorney, but there will be monies raised to help the biological mother come here, hopefully within a reasonable time, to be involved in the final internment of her son. All kinds of rumors are abounding now, including a rumor that the method of death was allegedly known by certain so-called leadership. There's a battle royal going on with regards to Reverend Harding Smith, Reverend Alexander on one side, the Liberian organization in Minnesota on the other. It is not good. It is not good, the volatility that we're seeing. But anyways, we have done our due diligence. Again, we repeat the date for Star Tribune and anybody else that is interested in contacting the leadership of the Liberian organization and this meeting that took place on April 6, 2015. And as I said, Mr. Allen, this was a commission of inquiry. And they did raise some real tough questions, and there are some rather interesting responses.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty
okay, what, any update? As I've been talking, we're now at 9:15 and a half. Is there any additional update on the breaking news that the legislative auditor, Mr. James Noble, has been directed to open an investigation under color of law of the Minneapolis Urban League and its activities relevant to state money?
Updated again 8 minutes ago at 9:09, and the quote looks like it's put in, given the gravity of these allegations, it's likely we will conduct a full investigation, Noble said in the interview. He said the staff will initially conduct a preliminary review of the Urban League's financial condition and assess how much more time they need to make findings and recommendations. This preliminary review would put the Urban League on notice about the seriousness of the allegations, he said.
This is a spokeswoman for Mr. Noble. Is that correct?
Mr. Noble said he received a letter from Assistant Minority Leader Michelle Benson, Republican Hamley, urging him to audit the Urban League after, after reading reports.
Mr. Edwards was absolutely, I was absolutely correct when I indicated what the protocol is for Mr. Noble to be ordered into an investigation. So the minority whip of the Republican Party in the Minnesota Senate, formally under color of the rules of the Minnesota Senate, requested a formal investigation of the Urban League of Minneapolis. Have I crafted that correctly, Michelle?
Yes, you have crafted it elegantly.
I am receiving text messages myself here in studio that wow, people are now indicating that a request is being made for the impaneling of the initiation of a federal investigation and the possible impaneling of a federal grand jury.
Hmm.
My God.
What is happening here? For the Urban League?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness, Mr. Edwards. Yeah, I'm looking here. I'm seeing if they're find anything else here. But, you know, Ms. Edwards, we got to have a little serious conversation, and I jacked the time up for another 15 minutes while we were talking there.
All right, because
this is an important piece. Me since 2008, you forever, have mentioned that, you know, maybe those of us in the black community that have some kind of business acumen or some sense of process need to look in on the Urban League and see what's happening. We have wrote critical articles. When I say your critical articles, meaning that there are some concerns because things aren't changing for the black person or these black social service agencies, more particularly the Urban League, in the area around it. You have a 5th Congressional District Congressman's office in the Minneapolis Urban League, and if you walk within five blocks any direction out of that office, you have people that are 275% below the federal poverty line. Okay, that presents an issue. You have programs, you know, I mean, zero. It's like a ghost town in that building. It's basically a referral. You call there during a tornado, 2011. They had an empty group home over there behind Emerson, I think it was, or Fremont. And you would call, people would call the Urban League and they say, well, we don't have any place to put you. That creates another issue, another challenge. Okay, what is the agency doing? Who was the board of director for the chairman of the board of directors for the last 12 months at the Urban League? Why the sudden shift? When was the election? Who membership. I'm a member. I didn't get any notification, Mr. Edwards. So
nor
when you ask, yeah. So when you ask these questions to these people that look like us, they feel that, oh, we're attacking us, or you're bashing us, or you're doing. No, we're doing this because what's going to happen is you're going to have these white people all in your business, taking you apart, dismantling you piece by piece, all because you had your head too far up your butt to listen to anybody. And that's all
well,
on you.
Well, actually, Mr. Allen, I mean, I have to say, and again, the phone lines are open for anyone that desires to question. I assume that as you start giving the time of activation at approximately 9:03, I imagine people rush to their computers to authenticate, hoping that, that you certainly were making a misrepresentation. Based on what you've said, my text messages are indicating that clearly this is happening. Let me just say that you just made an interesting point. It makes me think that you've almost been talking to the reporters or something. It was indicated in a series of conversations today that doing an interview with Mr. Clinton Collins, the new board chair of the Urban League of Minneapolis, that the question that you just asked, Mr. Allen, was asked of him as it pertains to a board presence and the presence of individuals that, you know, knew how to allegedly run a business. And Mr. Collins, to the surprise of some, not to me, because I've known Mr. Collins for many years, indicated that the Urban League was moving in a new direction to bring aboard business types and begin to eliminate the presence of community people on the Urban League board because of the complexity and the difficulty of understanding how to run a business, okay? Now, there was a piece in there that you read that you said is in tomorrow morning's edition of the Star Tribune. I'm just trying to imagine how one winds up losing $8 million over a period of time and over 100 employees, because in 1989, as an example, the Urban League had properties and assets of in excess of $15 million and 114 employees. I think they have about 9 today.
Wow, wow. I mean, that's devastating, Mr. Edwards, but you know this process. When Reverend Clarence Hightower left the Minneapolis Urban League in 2008, if I'm not mistaken, to go over to Ramsey, Washington County Community Action, if I'm not mistaken, as an appointment through on an appointment from then Governor Tim Pawlenty, they had a search. They had a woman by the last name of Tucker, and they had Scott Gray. Scott Gray was brought in from Milwaukee because he ran the Milwaukee
Madison
Urban League. But still, Scott Gray had no skin in the game here. He didn't have
he did, and I have to correct you, my friend, on the right, because he had the association with the powerful head of the Stair Step Foundation, Dr. Alfred Babington Johnson, and Mr. Gray and others were very close friends and associates. In fact, people wanted to forget that Mr. Gray was actually president in our beloved city around 1987 and 88. He lived here and resided in the Twin Cities before he relocated to Milwaukee and got involved in the Urban League's management executive program, which qualified him a couple years later to apply for the position in Madison, Wisconsin, where he has become quite a businessman there, having apparently a couple of franchises dealing with the submarine shops on one hand and Dairy Queen on the other. But this is not good, Mr. Allen. As one who was very knowledgeable and continues to be knowledgeable and watch the Urban League grow and expand in the 1960s and definitely in the 70s and 80s, you know, and with the loss of the St. Paul Urban League a number of years ago and the loss of everything over there, you know, we're on the verge of being one of the few metropolitan areas in the United States of America that will have no urban leagues functioning and doing business.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't understand when I hear the letter from the Fab Four, as an example, if you will, indicating that these are the best of times and best of conditions and et cetera. And I'm watching these organizations go under, you know, and I'm seeing the same people kind of having an affiliation with each other and, you know, have been doing this for quite some time. Though in the case of Mr. Gray, he's only been here 6 years. But, wow, you know, I mean, how quickly he, quote-unquote, was able to basically dismantle or allow the Urban League to be dismantled. But, again, those phone lines are open for anybody that desires to, you know, express an opinion, observation, or whatever. I imagine, like I said, Mr. Allen, everybody's on top of them computers hoping that they can disprove the information, the breaking news that is coming from this program. And let me ask this question. Oh, yes, I see it here. The reporter is the same young lady that has been writing about this previously?
It is her along with Paul McEnroe. Her and Paul McEnroe.
Now, let me say this about Mr. McEnroe. Mm. And I looked at that name. Mr. McEnroe is the Star Tribune's chief criminal reporter. He has been involved with a number of stories over the last 8 or 9 years. In fact, he was the reporter who was at the heart of the stories that ultimately led to the destruction of the Black Police Officers Association of Minneapolis, Paul McEnroe. He is considered to be the Star Tribune's top criminal investigative reporter. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it. Paul McEnroe has not written anything about anything pertaining to the legislature. You know, the Star Tribune has its legislative reporters and et cetera. And Mr. McEnroe's name appeared about 30 minutes ago as one of the contributors, which means they have been conducting a criminal investigation of the Urban League.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And I'm looking at it.
That is kind of scary.
Yep, I am looking here to see if they added anything. Let me do a quick refresh, Mr. Edwards, and let me see here. If they went back in and updated anything, it'll tell me in less than a second here. Nope, 909 was the last update. I'm just scanning. It's a two-page article. It's up right now on StarTribune.com under politics, state and local. And
give us that read again,
legislative
section of the paper.
Okay, it is, it's in the politics, state and local, under home, go to home, online, then politics, and state and local, which means tomorrow it will be, in the morning it will be in the metro section. The legislative auditor will investigate the Minneapolis Urban League, and the legislative auditor is launching an investigation to whether or not the Urban League double billed the state. And the school district for education programs that received $1 million in taxpayer money. Given the gravity of the allegations, it's likely we'll conduct a full investigation, as Noble said in an interview. He said his staff will initially conduct a preliminary review of the Urban League's financial condition and then assess how much more time will be needed to make findings and recommendations. When they say findings and recommendations, you might as well hit the nail in the coffin. This preliminary review will put the Urban – his quote, This preliminary review will put the Urban League on notice about the seriousness of these allegations, he said. Dun, dun, dun.
And that statement was made by whom?
Mr. James Noble, Minnesota's legislative auditor.
Wow. I mean, I wonder at what point the Urban League and its leadership were formally informed that this investigation, as well as the possibility of the impaneling of a federal grand jury, was coming. For the purpose, I just received a text indicating that, are we correct about Mr. McEnroe? Are we sure that we're talking? I would refer you, Mr. Allen, I refer the people that are texting as we run into the final minutes, to the copyrighted stories in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, dealing with a a five-day series of investigative reporting by Mr. McEnroe. The date, for those that want to ask, April 19th, 20th, 21st, 22nd, and 23rd in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, dealing with corruption, if you will, in the Minneapolis Police Department, which ultimately led to a lawsuit and a $750,000 settlement to five African-American police officers who received no support from any of the leadership that is currently around, if you will. This was, again, we are giving you the dates of Mr. McEnroe's involvement. I tell you, when I saw Mr. McEnroe's name just now, I knew that what we have been hearing is absolutely correct. April 19th, 2009, for those that are at their little computers, that was Chapter 1, The Informant. And, of course, it was a reflection upon a well-crafted investigation that had been going on for a couple of years. Ultimately, it led to the destruction of the Black Police Officers Association. So when McEnroe was brought in, this is amazing, McEnroe was brought in to help the reporter, Alejandra. That means that they are, they have been assured, they have been assured that there will be criminal charges and possible indictments.
Mm.
What, my God, what has happened to our organizations?
I don't know, Mr. Edwards, you know, it kind of saddens me in one way, and I can't even, you know, smile and say, ha-ha, you know, they got you finally, because this is very serious, because I know you, as the leader of the Minneapolis Urban League for many years, when it had over 200 employees and the schools were open and it was functioning, had a huge budget, you have seen the demise, the thing just get decrepit over the years. And my initial venture into the Urban League to talk to people, it's like you can't get any response. They don't want to hear what you have to say. And that arrogance will kill you every time, you know, especially in an organization like that that could command, you know, you're talking about a measly little $1 million here and there with this little, investigation. But this should be an agency controlling anywhere from $12 to $25 million a year, making sure people are working, make sure there's contract compliance going on in the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul to do things. But if you notice, Mr. Edwards, and this is a rhetorical question, and I'm going to ask you, you might chuckle a little bit, when was the last time the Minneapolis Urban League had a press conference or publicly spoke about any black disparity?
Probably about 15 years.
Thank you.
Not since 1989.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Adams, I guess we're getting ready to wrap it. I tell you that I'm just extremely depressed. I think of some great African-Americans who nurtured and shepherded that organization, people such as Nellie Stone Johnson, the late Cecil Newman, Frank Alsop, the late Dr. Tabov. All these people are now deceased.
Uh-huh.
I am just stunned. I am just off my feet with regards to the fact that the legislative auditor and federal authorities are now making a move.
Yeah.
Maybe that explains why there were all those that traffic over there in the Urban League parking lot.
Well,
so I think that many of the cars were actually at there for a meeting at the at UROC.
Interesting.
Sad day. Sad time.
Well, we'd like to thank everybody for listening. We'll be back next week, same channel, same time. Again, you're listening to the Ron and Don Show. Thank you for listening, and we'll look forward to hearing you next week.
All right, take care. Bad love.